You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It was always going to be difficult, I think, for the Buccaneers and Patriots to live up to the hype last night. Tom Brady's return to Foxborough, one of the more anticipated regular season games in NFL history. And as I mentioned on Friday, don't expect a great game. You know, everybody, I think, looking at this game, leading up to this game, oh, this is going to be unbelievable. It's going to be a shootout, and who knows what it's going to be. But I said, don't be surprised if it's not a great game, because so much hype leading up to this. And the Patriots right now aren't a very good team. And the Buccaneers are banged up. The night wasn't helped out by the weather, but it did have a dramatic finish there. It rained all night in New England. Brady didn't look like himself, but he did come away with the win. Patriots actually had a chance to go ahead in the final minute, missed a long field goal attempt. I didn't understand the call, because if you said 4th and 3 and Tom Brady's your quarterback, you're going to go for it. Instead, with Mac Jones, who was playing well and at one point completed 19 consecutive passes, I would have gone for it on 4th and 3, because there's two reasons why. First of all, Nick Folk is not a long field goal kicker. You have the weather to factor in, a little bit of wind there. It's a long, long field goal for anybody, including Justin Tucker. Second of all, what better way to say to Mac Jones, you're our guy. We think you can win this game. We're going to give you that chance at 4th and 3. Here's the other thing. I can take the ball out of Tom Brady's hands. If I keep the ball and we get in better field goal range, now I've taken away clock. You know, there's 59 seconds to go. Let's say you make that field goal. So now you've given Tom Brady 55 seconds and 2 timeouts to get 3 points. I don't like those odds. If it's 4th and 3 and we go for it, we don't get it, it's okay. We've shown our quarterback we have confidence in him. Instead of, we're going to have a long field goal and still give Tom the ball back. It just didn't make any sense. Everybody wants to talk about the post-game hug. All right, they did have a hug. They did meet afterwards. We'll talk to Peter King about this. This is about winning the game. This is about managing the game. And I thought Bill Belichick let this one get away. I thought he whiffed on this one. Because I would have said to Mac Jones, all right, we're going to devise something here. I don't want Tom to get the ball back. And Belichick had to be thinking about that. Even if Nick Folk makes it, you still have Brady with a minute to go and a couple of timeouts. All you have to do is get 4 yards. That's it. And yes, is the defense going to be up and, you know, take away anything, you know, these little dink and dunk passes? Yes, but devise something here. I was surprised at that, because, you know, if Tom Brady was the quarterback, Tom Brady would have lobbied for it. Let me go for it. Mac Jones doesn't have, you know, that kind of clout. He doesn't have that kind of power, but he showed me a lot. He outplayed Brady. He played better. Brady wasn't helped out by, you know, Antonio Brown had a touchdown, dropped that. No Gronk in there. That Tampa defense, the back end is all banged up. So much so, Richard Sherman was just added on Wednesday, and he looked like he was just added on Wednesday. I thought this was a miss by Bill Belichick, that you could have sent the message in a variety of ways. Hey, Tom, good luck in Tampa. We have our quarterback. Mac, go out there, get the first down. Let's go. Let's go win this thing. Instead, and I said it in the moment, just so you know, even if you kick that 56-yarder, Brady still gets the ball back with a little less than a minute to go and 2 timeouts. I don't like that, even on a night like that. But it was interesting, at times entertaining. We got the post-game hug of sorts, and then Brady and Belichick reportedly met for around 20 to 30 minutes privately after the game. But we move on. It's week 4. And if you're the Buccaneers, you got to get that defense healthy. Gronk's going to be out for a while with a punctured lung. I was surprised New England couldn't run the football. At all, they had 1 rushing yard. Therefore, I mean, the defense knew Mac Jones was going to throw the ball. And he still was very accurate. And he got hit. He showed composure. If I'm a Patriot fan, I'd go, okay, I think we're okay at the quarterbacking position. I like what I saw. The defense played pretty well. You know, it just a couple of plays here and there, but that's the difference. It's weird, you know, with this moral victory stuff, because if it's a younger team, an inexperienced team, then you can say, okay, that could be a moral victory. The Patriots, that's not their approach. Bill Belichick is not going to say, hey, got a moral victory last night. I think the Buccaneers may feel like, that doesn't feel like a win. It just feels like we didn't lose that game. And there's some issues there. But everybody, of course, wanted to talk about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And here is Coach Belichick after the game.
You coached Tom Brady in practice for 20 years, but this is the first time you went ahead against him in a game. What was the experience like going?
We went against Tom Brady every day in practice defensively. So it's not like we've never seen Tom Brady before.
Was the experience of coaching against him in a game any different?
Yeah, they're a good football team. He's a great quarterback. I mean, I think that's all goes without saying.
All righty. It's been a long, long week. A lot of questions. He's soaked. He's like, it's... You know, midnight, I'm going to get out of here. I'm tired of answering questions.
High schoolers are asking him stuff.
Yeah. And let me hear that again.
You coached Tom Brady in practice for 20 years, but this is the first time you went ahead against him in a game. What was the experience like going?
We went against him.
Yes, Jake in L.A. Yes. Yeah. What do you have?
You coached Tom.
What happened on that fourth down play?
The Oracle.
Yeah, Oracle. You got one for me?
Yeah. Yeah, Oracle. It reminds me of the kid who came out too early and went to SportsCenter.
James K. Polk.
James K. Polk. It's like, what happened? He just came out too early. Came out too early. All right, what kind of poll question you got for me, McLevin?
By the way, is that right of a coach to say we coach against him every week? Like, obviously, it makes it feel like Belichick was coaching the defense and never liked Tom. But anyway, who felt like the winner last night? Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Mac Jones, or NBC? The biggest winner.
NBC?
I don't know. Paul threw that one in there.
I bet that rating is top three all time.
Yeah.
The first quarter rating. Mm. Maybe not the second and third.
All right. I'd say Mac Jones was the big winner last night. National stage, Tom Brady. You know, you got a guy mid-first round. I'd say Mac Jones won the night. Yes, Todd.
But Brady got it with the love and the cheering when he ran out there, and he still got the hugs from from Belichick and everything, got that embrace, and came away with the win. And now I think he only needs to beat the Seahawks in Seattle to take care of beating every single team, not only every team, but also on the road as well.
Yeah. I don't know if Tom, I think Tom probably just wants to exhale. I don't think he felt like, boy, I'm a winner. They survived. I think Mac Jones has to feel like, you know what, privately, I can play. I mean, I went toe-to-toe. It's still a pretty good defense that he went against. But Brady, you know, he completes that touchdown pass to Antonio Brown, then there's a different feel to this game. But... Brady had some things to say. He talked about on being back in New England.
I try not to predict what was going to happen and how I'd feel, and had a few emotional moments this week just thinking about all the people that have really meant so much to me in my life that are a part of this community. Just very grateful for, you know, amazing time here. And like I said, my football journey took me somewhere else, but I'm really enjoying that. And 3-1 against a really good football team tonight's what we wanted to get.
And he also spoke on his relationship with Bill Belichick.
We've had a personal relationship, you know, for 20 plus years. So he drafted me here and had a lot of personal conversations that should remain that way. And they're very private. And I would say so much is made of our relationship. And, you know, as I said earlier this week, you know, from a player standpoint, you just expect the coach to give you everything he's got. And I'm sure as a player, that's what he was hoping for me. But nothing's really accurate that I ever see. You know, definitely doesn't come from my personal feelings or beliefs. And I have a lot of respect for him as a coach and obviously a lot of respect for this organization and, you know, all the different people here that try to make it successful.
This program brought to you by Panini America, the hottest rookies, biggest superstars, the all-time greats. Only one place to collect all of them. Panini trading cards for instant classics, autograph cards, memorabilia cards, rare inserts, the hottest rookie cards. Start or continue your collection now at paniniamerica.net. NFL undefeated teams. You got the Cardinals and you got the Raiders. Raiders got the game tonight against the Chargers. Who would have thought that the Cardinals would be all alone in the NFC? That was a big win. You go into LA. Now, we said on Friday I wasn't going to be surprised if the Cardinals won that game. I wasn't. I picked the Patriots to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I wasn't surprised with either one of those outcomes. I think I was more surprised that the Cardinals handled the Rams. But the Rams coming off the emotional win, and then you play this game, although that's, you know, in your division. The Raiders play tonight against the Chargers. A couple of surprises. You know, I was surprised, obviously, with the Giants in New Orleans. The Jets at home against the Titans. The Titans allowed the Jets to hang in there. They dominated time of possession. Then you look up and you go, you better score a touchdown here. And the Jets, you could almost see the confidence level. Defensively, they hung in there. And Zach Wilson had a couple of nice throws and looked good at times. Watching the Steelers against the Packers, I can put this on Ben Roethlisberger, but it's not fair to do that. I don't think he has any time. He's throwing these little passes. You know, they got issues. And we talked about this going into the draft. I was surprised they brought Ben back on record as saying that. I wouldn't have brought him back because I just don't think he can be great again. Maybe not even very good again. Maybe have moments, but I just don't think that team right now is built for him. And that's where I was surprised they didn't take a quarterback in the draft. Now, here is Ben, who's 2 years older than Aaron Rodgers. They don't look like they play the same position. Rodgers still makes it look effortless. Pittsburgh tried to hang in there, make some plays defensively. I thought that the field goal attempt at the end of the first half, I thought that that was a wrong call. I didn't think the Steelers were offsides. I thought Minka Fitzpatrick did a wonderful job in timing that. Packers did a poor job in blocking. There were two guys coming, and there was one guy blocking, and you let the guy inside, and Minka Fitzpatrick makes a great play. I think that was the wrong call. But Green Bay was still the better team yesterday. I'm trying to think. Minnesota, I was watching Minnesota, and you're still trying to figure out who Minnesota is, how good they are, if they're good at all. Buffalo look really, really good, but they're playing against the Texans. Here's something to keep an eye on right now. And that is the Miami Dolphins lost again. I think this week might be a lot of questions for Brian Flores about Deshaun Watson. You don't have Tua there, but you have Jacoby Brissett playing against a Colts team that's all banged up. Colts don't have their best offensive lineman. Carson Wentz on two bad ankles, and you're at home, and you can't beat the team that you used to play for? I was really surprised at that. I would keep an eye on what happens with Miami and the questions that are asked if they're in the market for Deshaun Watson. Not that Brian Flores is going to say anything. He's going to say, we have our quarterbacks here. This is about ownership. But you lost again. This is about ownership. And this is a division where you should still get 10 wins. You should be a playoff caliber team. Those are the things, you know, that I'm keeping an eye on. You know, the Chargers with the Raiders tonight, I mean, that's a big game for both of these teams. Because it feels like Kansas City is vulnerable. I watched most of that game with the Eagles. And even though Mahomes was great, they allow teams to stay in. Now, that was one of those games where they won by double digits. It's been rare that they've been able to do that. And that's an Eagles team that's not very good. But Philadelphia stayed with them. Kansas City allows you to stay with them. And if you're the Raiders, you're the Chargers, Chargers have already beaten them. You have to feel like, you know what? The AFC West is still up for grabs here. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. College football, Alabama rolled over Ole Miss. Horrible, horrible loss for Oregon. Notre Dame at home against Cincinnati, not surprised at all. That Cincinnati defense is really good, really fast, and you got a quarterback who can make some plays. But, you know, there are a lot of things to recap. A wild baseball Sunday, playoffs are set, Monday night football, Raiders and Chargers. The Dodgers, you know, I mean, you have 106 wins. And I know, Dodger fans, you want to complain about this, but you got to complain before it happens. You know, when you're losing, then you want to complain. When you're winning, you'd have no problem with the wild card format. But it's a lot of wins to be playing in a winner-take-all one game. It doesn't seem fair. I don't like it, but you can't complain about it after the fact. You know, Major League Baseball, I still think, should look at rewarding these teams that play well and the seeding or reseeding. I really believe that. But, hey, who am I to question Major League Baseball? Oh, that's right. I should question Major League Baseball. There's a lot of reasons to.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's bring in Peter King, Football Morning in America, must-read column for any football fan, and also contributor to NBCSports.com. Pete, thanks for joining us. How would you best describe the atmosphere last night?
Surprisingly, 100% loving. I thought the fans did a fabulous job in, you know, I was down on the field, Dan, it started raining very lightly at 7:29 in Foxborough. At 7:30, Tom Brady walked out to a great, great ovation. And, you know, I had been around New England a couple of weeks ago, and there's some people in New England, and I think quite a few of them, who aren't in love with Tom Brady the way they used to be. But fans really showed him love. And then I thought it was great. The first time that the Tampa Bay offensive unit came on the field, there were thunderous boos in the stadium, which is exactly how you should treat
sure.
a visiting team, no matter whether Tom Brady's the quarterback or Milt Plum is. So I thought the scene was really cool last night. The other thing, Dan, that crowd stood for 3.5 hours. It was interesting to see.
Who was the big winner last night? And if I said Brady, Belichick, Mac Jones.
I mean, Dan, you know, imagine what could he be thinking about? Look, his life changed forever 6 months ago when he had nothing to do with it being other than the fact he was a good quarterback. He didn't, you know, hold a gun to anybody's head and say, draft me. Bill Belichick drafted him, and he came into this maelstrom, this Brady versus Belichick maelstrom. And last night he handled the pressure. And Dan, he took 3 or 4 shots last night.
Yeah.
Big, big shots. And he just came back and he kept dunking all over the field. 19 completions in a row, obviously, at one point. Mac Jones, Dan, you know what happened last night? Both teams won that game because the Bucs survived a tough road game against a guy who's got the answers to all of the tests in Bill Belichick. The Bucs survived. They have major injury problems. Somehow they've got to limp through these games and find ways to win while some of these defensive players get healthy and they don't have to play Richard Sherman every snap. And so they've got to figure out a way. They did for one night. So, the Bucs are 3-1. And as Brady told me before he got on the bus to leave the stadium, he goes, listen, that's all that matters. Now what matters is me falling asleep on the plane so that when I wake up in the morning, we can worry about trying to be 4-1 next week.
I was surprised at the 4th-and-3 call.
Me too.
If Tom Brady's your quarterback, Bill Belichick is not going to settle for a 56-yard field goal in that kind of weather, right?
But you know what was weird about it, Dan, is and I just kept thinking about this, all right? So I don't know what Nick Foles, because they hide all their injuries, but word was last night that Nick Foles' plant leg is not 100%. It was raining hard at that point. And you're asking him to make a 56-yard field goal? I mean, the guy almost did it. He shtoinked it. But anyway, I just thought to get through. I would much rather, with a minute to go in the game, I would much rather have tried for the first down with Mac Jones. And if you get the first down, then you're in very makeable field goal position. So I was surprised, and I thought it was the wrong call by Bell.
Okay, but also factor this in. Let's say you make the field goal. I've given Brady 55 seconds, two timeouts. Didn't make sense at all. Even if you make it, Brady can still beat you. Why not go for it on fourth and three? And Mac Jones had been pretty good. He had 19 in a row, had a couple incompletions, and then it had a completion. And I just thought it would have been one of those moments in front of Brady. Not that Belichick wants to do this, but you'd be saying to your team and Mac Jones, hey, I trust you. Go out there and win.
Exactly.
Go out and win that game.
I don't think it's that big a deal for Mac Jones, you know, to have the coach say, hey, I trust you. He hasn't really earned it yet, you know, honestly. So, but you're right. The bigger issue is you're leaving Brady what would have been about 55 seconds and two timeouts to go, what, 35 yards to kick another, you know, a twin-winning field goal.
I don't know. I didn't like it.
Mistake, I thought.
We're talking to Peter King. His column, Football Morning in America, is available right now. What do the Steelers do?
I'll tell you, Dan, I didn't see their game yesterday, but, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers are in trouble. And I think the main trouble comes from the simple fact that, you know, okay, what did the Pittsburgh Steelers do in this offseason? You know, what they did in this offseason was say, we understand we've got an old quarterback, and we understand we don't have a mobile quarterback, but I'll tell you what we're going to do this year. We are going to help Ben Roethlisberger by giving him a running game and by, you know, changing up the offensive line. Well, last year, and I think I'm right in saying this, Dan, last year they were horrible running the ball, 3.6, 3.7 a carry, whatever. Well, what are they this year? They draft a running back number one overall, Najee Harris. And as we look at the numbers this morning, they are 3.3 yards a carry this year. They're running it worse than they ran it last year. So that plus the fact, hey, Dan, this team for three consecutive weeks has not broken 17 points. You know, they've not scored over 17. So you are asking, admittedly, what's a good defense? You're asking a good defense to basically play games in the teens all year. That is simply not sustainable.
The Niners drafted Trey Lance, I think, in part because Jimmy Garoppolo can't stay healthy. And now you have this scenario playing out where he's not healthy. Now Trey Lance comes in. How do you think this plays out this year? Even though Garoppolo has played pretty well, I think, by all accounts.
I mean, Dan, there's a reason why Jimmy Garoppolo was heartbroken when the 49ers called him in March and basically said, we're probably going to take a quarterback. And he's heartbroken because this was his team, and he thought that they could recreate 2019 in 2021 and play great again. But Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, Jed York, they basically, without ever saying it, I don't even think they would say it to many people off the record, but how can you trust a quarterback who's been hurt as much as Jimmy Garoppolo has? Who's played 23 of the previous 48 regular season games. I just, there's no way they could trust him. And I understand Jimmy Garoppolo once more is heartbroken after getting hurt again, but this is the reason why they decided to draft a quarterback third overall. Now, I'd say two things about Trey Lance that interest me right now. Number one, in his limited time playing, both as a runner and a thrower, he has not turned the ball over yet, and he's played a little bit in every one of the games so far. So that is encouraging. And I think the second thing is he's going to be able to get out on the edge. And I'm not saying he's going to play Lamar Jackson or you know, or you know,
Kyler Murray
football. But I am saying that I think he's going to be able to make more plays with his legs than Garoppolo did. And by the way, I forget who I listened to this morning very early when I was coming back to the hotel after the game last night, but they said, okay, now if you can get something for Garoppolo before the trading deadline, go ahead and do it. And I said, no, no, no. You keep your depth at quarterback when you think you're a contending team. And so the 49ers basically are going to try to win with Lance and hope that he can prove over the next few weeks that he's the quarterback of the future. If not, Shanahan will have no problem going back to Garoppolo.
Well, if Garoppolo's heart is broken, that's just another injury for him, though, Pete.
Yeah, he's on the injury report this week with parentheses, broken heart, end of parentheses.
The Arizona Cardinals go into L.A., and they rough up the Rams and that great defense. Is it time to climb on the Arizona bandwagon?
Yesterday, really, I think, became convincing that you have to climb on their bandwagon. The two things about that game that I found so interesting. Number one, for the third straight week, Kyler Murray, who was supposed to be a good thrower, but not necessarily a pinpoint thrower, is now the first quarterback in the long history of the Cardinals franchise, Chicago, St. Louis, Arizona, to have three straight games of 75% completions. So that's one thing. But I think the other part of this is when the Arizona Cardinals hired Cliff Kingsbury, one of the things that they said is, look, this is not a usual NFL offense, but the one thing that this offense will do is this offense will run the ball. And so far this year, look, they've passed it just great. But they still run the ball very, very well. Dan, they're running it 31 times a game. And that's a lot of runs in today's football. So if they're running it 31 times a game and they have a quarterback playing as well as Kyler Murray and they're scoring in the 30s every week, it's going to be a tough team to beat.
Is Dallas a running team now?
No. Dallas is just like Arizona, Dallas to me is a versatile team who can pull anything out of its bag of tricks any week. And, you know, the Cowboys to me, this is the kind of team they always wanted to be. That in some week, if they needed to throw it 45 times, they could. If they needed to run it, if they need to run it 40 times, they can do that too. And I think it also helps, especially in a 17-game season, to have a two-headed rushing monster, you know, like Elliott and Pollard give you.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned this at the top of the show. I wonder if those questions to Brian Flores in Miami start to heat up a little bit with Deshaun Watson. And I know Brian Flores is not going to answer it, but I don't know. It just feels like losing that game, Jacoby Brissett against a banged-up Colts team, you're at home, you lose by double digits. Do you think that that trade talk starts to heat up at all this week?
I think it depends on how hot it gets for Flores and for Chris Greer. I think the Miami Dolphins at 1-3, especially with a double-digit loss to a winless team at home, you know, they can't, no matter who plays quarterback for them, they're not playing well on offense. Dan, I think that as much as you never want to make a panic move, and I don't suggest that they make this panic move. I think Stephen Ross is going to start to get very impatient very soon.
Yeah, I agree. Great stuff as always, Pete. Thank you again for joining us, and safe travels.
Thanks a lot, Dan. You take care.
That's Peter King, Football Morning in America, NBCSports.com, and sleep-deprived, I'm sure. I don't even know if he's been to bed. That's why... You know, when Fritzy said, hey, do you want to have Peter on? I said, well, he's probably going to stay up all night to write his column. And we might get him like peak morning with some coffee, and then probably fall asleep on the train ride back to New York.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carson Palmer back with us. All right, fourth and three. You got Mac Jones playing well. You got 37-yard line. You got a defensive secondary that's depleted. Why didn't Bill Belichick go for it with Mac Jones?
Well, I just think Belichick's used to having great kickers, and he has a ton of confidence in his kicker. You go back from Steven Guskowski, you go back to Vinatieri. He had a lot of confidence. I know it's rainy, there was no wind, but that was a game winner, and he went for it just simply because he's got a lot of confidence in his special teams crew.
Yeah, but I'm going to give Brady the ball, even though he's down, with 55 seconds to go and two timeouts. I don't want Brady having the ball where he can go down, you know, he's got to go 35, maybe 40 yards to win the game.
Yeah, but the way that that game was going defensively, he was frustrating Brady all game long. Defensively, they were bringing a lot of different pressures, giving him a lot of different looks. I just felt, you know, watching that and seeing that decision unfold, he felt like he was going to kick the game winner and then kick the ball off and stop Brady on defense, which would have been a pretty Belichickian thing to do.
If Brady is Belichick's quarterback last night, is he going for it on fourth and three?
I don't think so. I think okay. when you watch Belichick and you just the history of what he's done, he sticks by his guns. He does what he does. He confuses the opposing quarterback. He brings a lot of different pressures. He plays great defense. He wins games with special teams. And unfortunately, it didn't happen last night with the special teams kick at the end that they missed.
Okay, what is it like going against Belichick?
Really frustrating. You know, I unfortunately, two different times in my career, had to open up in a season opener against him, which typically when you play against Belichick, you love to have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 game weeks of film to watch preparing. Unfortunately, two different times I'm 0 for 2 in an opener against Belichick just because you don't know what to watch. You know, you can watch all the preseason film you want. There's nothing you can really pick up from that. You can watch the prior season's film and the playoff games that he most likely played in the year before and get somewhat of a feel for what he does defensively. But in openers, he's really, really difficult. And for Brady, obviously, it was really difficult last night. It was a frustrating game for Brady. Obviously, there's a lot of hoopla around the return, but he frustrated Brady. He brought a lot of different pressures, and he showed a ton of different looks and played a bunch of different coverages. And Brady never really, as you watch the game go on, never really felt very comfortable and confident in what he was seeing pre-snap and then post-snap.
How is it possible Brady's going to see something he's never seen before in playing over 20 years at that position?
I don't think there is anything he's never seen before, but consistently he never saw the same coverage. He saw a lot of different looks pre-snap and then a lot of different looks that turned out to be different coverages post-snap. So it wasn't anything new or some new defense that Belichick made up. He just consistently kept him unnerved. He brought a lot of different five-man pressures. I mean, you looked at what Tampa does, and Tampa likes to spread you out and get in five-man protections and have five receivers run the routes. And Belichick consistently gave him looks where there was possibly six guys coming, but they never really made Brady throw hot very often. They consistently brought five-man pressures, which got defensive linemen in one-on-one situations with their offensive linemen. And, you know, that's what's frustrated Brady throughout his career. You go back to the Super Bowl losses against the New York Giants and the games that Brady really struggled with were pressures and defensive blitzes. And that's what you saw all night long in New England last night.
You on the Cardinals bandwagon?
I'm on it. We're 4-0 right now. I think we have the most exciting team in the NFL to watch. And I think we have the most. Yeah. Oh, I'm allowed to say we 100%. I've earned that right. So I can
say
wait,
are you saying the Bengals are we? Are the Raiders are we for you? Just the Cardinals are we?
I'm a Cardinal. That's where I finished my career. That's what my kids, those are the jerseys my kids wear on Sunday. So I'm a Cardinal fan.
Okay. All right. So what makes you any issues with the Cardinals?
You know, I would say offensive line could be an issue, but Kyler Murray is that dynamic where he doesn't need five Pro Bowlers blocking for him. I think right now he's the MVP of the league. If he can keep up what he's doing, I think he's the most valuable player in the league. Defensively, we can stop the run. You got Chandler Jones. You got Isaiah. You got a lot of speed pass rushers. You got some power pass rushers. So I just like the complete package that we, the Cardinals, have right now.
We're talking to Carson Palmer, former NFL quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger, it didn't look pretty. How much of this is on Ben, though, Carson, and how much of this is directed, redirected to the offensive line or play calling or whatever it might be?
It's all of it. I mean, it's all of it. They're not the offensive line they were 4 or 5 years ago when they had Villanueva and just the Pro Bowlers they had stacked up front and the first-round picks they had stacked up. So, you know, part of it's that, but a lot of it too has been, you know, it's not easy to watch right now. You're seeing a quarterback that can't quite create the same velocity with each throw. Some throws are beautiful. You saw the over the shoulder go throw he threw it. That was a nice long completion, but you know, consistently you saw it at the end of, you know, I felt it at the end of my career. You saw it at the end of Peyton's career. You saw it at the end of Drew Brees' career. Balls are starting to really kind of fade off at the end and die. There's not a ton of velocity and a lot of zip on the throws. So as this season goes on, and again, I mean, we're going into 17 games now. Ben's used to playing 16 games or 13, 14, 15 games with some of the injuries he's had over the last handful of years. But going 17 games without that offensive line that he's used to having, without that massive run game that he's had throughout his career, and he doesn't have all the weapons. I mean, Claypool's a nice threat on the outside, but he doesn't have the Antonio Browns and the Santonio Holmes and the Antoine Randall-Els and Hines and all these great players you can think back through Ben's career. He's not playing with the same weaponry he has in the past. And then you throw out that Watt, one of the best defensive linemen, best defensive players in the NFL, has got the groin injury. So, I mean, seeing Ben, you know, at this point in stage in his career and with the lack of weapons he has on offense and defense, it's looking like a long year for the Steelers.
What's the first thing to go on a quarterback?
You know, it just depends. When you look at Ben, it's the transfer of weight into every throw. It's like I said earlier, it's that velocity. He does not have that same velocity when he needs to rip a dig in over the middle. That's a ball that needs to carry 30 to, you know, 20 to 30 yards. When he's throwing a comeback from the left hash to the right sideline, that ball has to carry 30 yards in the air. You're just not seeing the ball get there as quickly and as rapidly. And when that ball hangs in the air, these DBs are so fast and so explosive and close cushion and close coverage so fast that when you start getting to 36, 37, 38 years old and the ball's hanging in the air, that's a bad recipe.
But Brady still has that arm strength, right? And Rodgers still has that arm strength. And that's rare at, because it feels like, you know, you mentioned you, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, now Ben. You know, you have only so many throws in those arms, those shoulders, and especially if you have surgery. But is this, how much of this is core and body strength? Because Brady is really big on that core with that torque to be able to deliver the ball. And as he said, hey, I'm not losing anything off my fastball.
Oh, a ton of it's core and a ton of it is lower body. I mean, that's your foundation. And that is where the ball going into a throwing motion all starts. It's from that back hip. It's transferring the weight. And it absolutely blows my mind watching Brady throw the ball at 44. I mean, the ball still has velocity on it. It still has zip. There's a couple times last night you saw him moving within the pocket because you lose the arm and you lose the velocity, but you also lose that bounce in your step and that explosion when you get to the top of the drop and you need to shift and slide into the middle or the soft spot of the pocket. And you saw that a little bit with Peyton. You're seeing it with Ben. You're not seeing it with Brady. He still has that pop. He took off and ran for a first down on 3rd and 7 last night. and he looked like he was 28. I just don't get it. It boggles my mind. But as far as the bounce and the pop and the pep in his step, he's got it. As far as velocity and the ball not tailing off at the end and the ball not being affected by different wind directions, Brady's not losing that. He still has that. And when he talks about playing till 50, maybe he's right. Maybe he does.
What is it like? I don't know if you felt this way, but you go out there and you're not excited to be out there as the starting quarterback, that you just, you're not having fun or you don't feel well. Like, have you had that? Did you have that feeling where this is my job, but I don't want to go out here?
I haven't felt that, and I haven't played with many guys that have felt that, or at least I haven't played with many guys that I sensed were feeling that. What I have played with and what I have seen is, especially in running backs, when you don't quite have the juice to get you through a hole or get you through a seam on third and three that you used to be able to get to, and you don't quite have that pop or that pep in your step to explode through the line of scrimmage, I've seen that happen to guys, and it's deflating. It wrecks your confidence. It wrecks your morale. You maybe don't quite have the same love for the game because it's so much more difficult, or you know that you physically can't do what you used to be able to do. So I've definitely seen that. But as far as guys just not wanting to play and not loving the game anymore, you know, after you get to 7, 8, 9, 10 years in the league, the only reason you got to that point is because you have that love, and that fire will always burn. But, you know, I haven't seen that. And if you have, let me know with certain guys. But I've seen that lack of explosion, that lack of athletic ability. I mean, you see it in running backs kind of at that 31, 32, 33 years old age where guys start losing that explosiveness.
Well, there's defensive backs who don't want to tackle sometimes. And there's running backs who are just tired of getting pounded. Instead of going inside, they want to dance outside. I remember watching defensive backs, you know, we've seen with running backs, Jerome Bettis talks about it. He said, I knew there were defensive backs that just didn't want to tackle me. That it was just, they knew it was going to hurt. And but they knew they had to give the impression. So they do the arm tackle or go, you know. So I could imagine that. You'd see somebody come through the line and you're just going, oh, this is going to hurt.
Oh, I would always put myself in situations like, what would happen? I would just mentally see, like, I used to play against Jerome Bettis, and I've actually stood on the other sideline in warmups and watched him. And I've sat there and mentally thought, what would I do if I was standing in the B gap and the bus was coming downhill and he had two arms on the ball and I saw the 36 on his forehead get low? What would I do? Would I be able to keep my eyes open and at least try to get in his way, or at least be a speed bump in his way? So I can understand that feeling for corners, especially when you're a corner and you're 160 pounds or 185 pounds and you got 240 coming at you and it runs 4.2. That's a problem.
I mentioned this earlier in the show that having that cornerback who can take away one side of the field, Trayvon Diggs of the Cowboys looks like he's a true shutdown corner. What does it do to your game plan when you're facing, and you faced a lot of great defensive backs, but they're taking away your best guy and taking, like Darrelle Revis used to do this, or Deion used to do that. What's that like when you go, I can't go there?
Well, it shrinks your game plan. I mean, you can go into a game plan and have 150 pass calls. And when you have to shut down half the field for 150 of your play calls, especially we had a tough time in Cincinnati with Chad Ochocinco because Darrelle Revis would line up on him and he would give us fits. I mean, he was so difficult in one-on-one press coverage. And the great thing that Darrelle Revis had behind him was Rex Ryan, because he had that defensive front that he could bring pressures from all over the field, so multiple. And he would get in your head as a quarterback knowing, okay, I got to be prepared to throw hot on all of these plays. And then I know I got Revis over there one-on-one. So, I mean, it just shrinks your playbook. You know that on certain plays, when that shutdown corner that you're referring to is on that side of the field, you need to work that side of the field.
Yeah, I just can't imagine where you just go – and I've mentioned, of all the positions, if you're a great defensive back, chances are you're not going to be on TV because you're never going in that direction. So we would never, you just were told that Darrelle Revis was great. You didn't really see it. Was there anybody else that you just went, I got to stay away from his side of the field?
I mean, Nnamdi Asamoah was a great, great corner. He played a ton of man when he was with the Oakland Raiders at the time. He would just lock you up, and he was so long and so physical that even if he didn't cover you for the whole time, he was so great at the line of scrimmage, he would reach out and get his hands on you and reroute the receiver so that by the time you did get your eyes over there, you would see Nnamdi with his hands shoving your receiver almost out of bounds or almost to the ground, so you'd have to get off that read and move on. But that guy can be a game wrecker, no doubt. And you're right. I mean, there's not a lot of recognition. There's not a lot of interceptions that take you to the Pro Bowl. You don't get 7, 8, 9, 10 interceptions in a year that normally send a guy to the Pro Bowl. That guy normally gets 3 or 4 because they only threw at him, you know, a dozen or so times.
Yeah, but would you rather worry about Darrelle Revis or Ed Reed?
Ed Reed had a bigger impact on the game because Ed didn't just cover one receiver. Ed was told to play a certain coverage in his helmet when the play came in, and he would read the offensive play and be in a spot he was never supposed to be in that could totally blow up a play or intercept the ball. So Ed was, you know, I loved playing against Ed and I hated playing against Ed, but he was one of the best to do it for sure.
But I'm wondering, you talk about Junior Seau was like that. Troy Polamalu was like that. These guys who sort of, they just go where they feel like they need to go. And you're trying to call a play, and then you're trying to figure out, okay, I got to account for these guys because they're Hall of Famers. How difficult is that to do where somebody's unpredictable?
Yeah, you had to have 3 reads when you played against the Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu's of the world. And most defenses and defensive backs, you had to have 2 reads. It was a pre-snap and a post-snap read. But then when you played against one of those guys, you had to have a pre-snap read, a post-snap read. So once the ball was in your hands, which way they were going. And then before you threw it, you had to eye them a third time just to make sure they stayed in that spot before you threw it to the other spot. So Damn. Those were 3 read defenders for sure.
It's hard enough to play the position. You got to factor in all of those things.
Yeah, you got to be careful of those ball hawks.
Yeah. Hey, great to talk to you as always. We appreciate your time, Carson. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Carson Palmer. His weekly appearance during the NFL season brought to you by our partner, Level Select CBD.